new phase of the anti-U.S. struggle that has lasted century after century began this week. It's a quote, direct quote, from the latest nuclear rhetoric from North Korea. The threat this week of a higher-level nuclear test aimed at the United States. How you aim a test at anyone, I don't quite follow, but that original statement attributed to North Korean leader Kim Jong-un was followed up by a statement from the North Korean National Defense Commission, which declared all-out war against the U.S., called Washington the sworn enemy of the Korean people, and has ruled out talks over denuclearization. Joining us now is Joel Witt, visiting fellow at the U.S.-Korea Institute at Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies and author of the blog 38 North. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So how surprising is this rhetoric? Are we out of the Kim Jong-un sort of measuring himself against the North Korean bureaucracy, and is this something fundamentally new?
Well, I don't see this as something fundamentally new. It's kind of a continuation of what North Korea has done in the past and the continuation of the rhetoric that you would have found under his father, Kim Jong-il. So, you know, it's a reflection that North Korea is on this trajectory, and it's been on it for some time now.
Let's talk about the capability as far as we understand it. They have limited stockpiles of plutonium and also uranium. Their ability to hit the United States with some sort of missile in a test or otherwise would involve using their plutonium to actually create a warhead for a missile like that. Is this a uranium threat, a plutonium threat? Does anyone know?
Well, first of all, they do have a very limited stockpile, and as far as we know, it's entirely based on plutonium. There's the possibility that that stockpile will expand if they bring online facilities we know they have to produce highly enriched uranium. So that's the first point. Second point is in terms of building a missile that can actually reach and hit the United States, they're still a long way away from that. They can probably build a missile that can fly far enough to reach the United States, but it's a lot more complicated than that if you want to put a nuclear warhead on top and actually hit targets. And that includes a lot of technical steps they haven't mastered yet, as far as we know.
So if North Korea is bluffing, as it sounds like they are, and a lot of the reports suggest that the nuclear threats are completely overblown, what's the sort of policy imperative here? To ignore them, to call the bluff, but to, you know, develop some other kind of engagement mechanism with North Korea? I mean, if they're not a threat, then they shouldn't be that important. But if they are a threat in other ways than nuclear, there should be some sort of engagement with North Korea.
You know, I think the most important point here is that they are a threat, and they may be exaggerating now about what they might be able to do, but they're clearly on the road to trying to develop these kinds of capabilities. So they may not have it today, but in 5 years from now, they may have it. And if you're going to develop a policy to deal with that, you don't want to wake up 5 years from now and say, oh, gee, there's a threat. Let's do something. You want to head that off ahead of time. And so we shouldn't dismiss this danger.
The Chinese have signaled that they're running out of patience with this persistent sort of nuclear threat language from North Korea, signaling that aid could be cut to North Korea if they don't alter their behavior in some way. Do you think that message from Beijing resonates, is powerful enough to change the behavior in Pyongyang?
Well, actually, you know, my reading of what China is saying is a little bit different from the way you've described it. I think whenever these kinds of things happen, China, you know, sometimes we try to read too much of its body language. And the point I'm making is that their policy has been consistent. Despite what's going on in North Korea, China has a much bigger goal in dealing with Pyongyang, and that's to maintain stability. It's not to stop North Korea's nuclear program. And so when China is put in this kind of situation, it may make noises, it may give some support to UN action, but at the end of the day, it's still going to be in North Korea's corner. So their policy, as far as I can tell, isn't shifting. If it did shift, You know, there might be some significance, but as the Chinese say, their influence is more limited than we think it is. And I can understand that because the United States can't dictate to its allies what their policy should be. So why should China be able to dictate to its allies?
The Clinton second term was focused a lot on North Korea, particularly in the very waning days of the second Clinton administration. Do you think the Obama administration needs to focus more on North Korea, or that it will have to based on these events?
I think the administration really has to focus more. And the main point here is that for the first 4 years, the administration's had this policy of essentially ignoring North Korea. And that just does not work. And that's pretty clear now with the successful missile test last month and what's going on in the nuclear area this month. So the administration has to focus more on North Korea and work out a new approach with the new government in South Korea, which, of course, is centrally concerned with what's going on.
Would you fault that ignoring of North Korea to Barack Obama himself, or is it more a feature of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton? And do you see that changing under John Kerry? What sort of a record does he have on North Korea?
You know, I probably shouldn't say this, but sometimes it's harder for me to figure out what's going on inside the U.S. government than it is for me to figure out what's going on inside North Korea. So I don't know exactly what led to the approach during the first term. All I can say is, first, that we need a different approach. Secondly, that maybe with the advent of John Kerry and Chuck Hagel and a new South Korean president who wants a different approach, that will shift our policy in a different direction.
And you don't need a visa to travel to Washington, D.C. You're actually right there at Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, right?
Yeah, well, you know, you're absolutely right, but I don't know what more to say about that.
Joel Witt, thanks so much. Visiting fellow at the U.S.-Korea Institute at Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. He also runs the blog 38 North. Thanks so much.
Thank you.